Shalom Chevra. I hope YBH is going well and that you're all learning Shark, as you should be. I am last week's Sichas Moser. It's actually a pretty good shtick to put up two Steinmetzes back to back. But I'm sorry to disappoint those of you who are expecting the other Jacob Steinmetz. I think the closest I ever came to playing professional baseball was making second cut in the DRS softball team as a pitcher. And Beinenu, I think the reason why they're so interested in me is because my grandfather is a butcher. And almost as important to a softball, baseball team in high school as a pitcher is hot dogs. So, even so, they decided the hot dogs weren't worth having me as a backup pitcher. You know, maybe I should start going by Yaakov to avoid confusion between me and the other Jacob Steinmetz in the future. Okay. This week's Parsha is, of course, a very central one. Maimon Har Sinai, Matan Torah, the Luchos, and Moshe Rabbeinu is on center stage. Which prompts Revolbi to ask, very simply, why would such a fundamental parsha, with such a central role player as Moshe, be named after Yisro? A, he wasn't a Jew at the time. And B, he plays a relatively minor role in the parsha. So why is Yisro the Hakdama to Kabbalah Satorah? Additionally, Revolbi asks that the Ramban brings a machlokes in Chazal, whether Yisro came kodem alach or matan Torah. So if he came kodem matan Torah, I understand why the parsha begins with Yisro, because chronologically that makes sense. But if Yisro came la'achar matan Torah, then why does the Torah preempt Har Sinai with Yisro's arrival? So Revolbi concludes that it must be that Yisro possesses a midah which is a prerequisite for Kabbalah's Torah. So the parsha begins with Yisro in order that we be adequately prepared for Kabbalah's Torah. So what was this midah that Yisro possessed, that's essential for Kabbalah Satorah? In my kids' Parsha books, Har Sinai is depicted as a sweet, innocent little mountain, covered in flowers, always smiling and pleasant, unlike the other big, grumpy, argumentative mountains. But if you go through Chazal, you find that Har Sinai was not exactly the most comfortable and enjoyable place to be. In fact, Har Sinai and Matan Torah was replete with death and destruction. Chazal tell us that Parcha Nishmosei and Bechol Dibor V'Dibor, that everybody in Klal Yisrael died upon hearing each one of the Aseres HaDibros. The Maharal, in Netzach Yisrael, Perek Lam and Gimel, he explains the Gemara in Bava Basra, where Rabba Bar Rachana is shown Har Sinai, and he sees that Har Sinai is surrounded by scorpions as large as donkeys. It's a very random comparison to be drawing. What's behind that particular description? Says the Maharal, a donkey's bite is so strong that it can break bones, as those of you who learned Pesachim last year know. And a scorpion's sting is so lethal that it can kill a person instantly. Says the Maharal, this imagery represents the fact that Har Sinai, which had scorpions as large as donkeys, was a place where man cannot exist. He has no mitzvahs there. He is totally destroyed inside and out. So why such gloomy, gory imagery attached with Har Sinai? This could be understood with another Maharal, a Maharal in Teferis Yisrael, Perek Chavav. He makes a comment about Maimon Har Sinai, that Maimon Har Sinai was not just an isolated event that happened to a particular nation. From Chazal, it's clear that Har Sinai had worldwide ramifications. It ushered in a universal transformation in the very fabric of existence. The Medrash Rabbah Parsha in Sefer Shmos describes the atmosphere in the entire world at the moment of Maimon Har Sinai. It goes through all these different animals. It's Tzipor Lotzaf, Ashor Loga, animal upon animal, remained completely silent. All of creation ceased to exist. Why? Because a new reality was being created at that moment. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Pei Tes, brings a sheet of Rabbi Yavam. Says, how come Har Sinai is referred to as Har Choriv? Says Rabbi Yavoah, it's referred to as Har Chorev because it's a makom sheyarda churba la'akom alav. That Har Sinai is a place where there was churba, where there was destruction to the other nations. And the obvious question is, what do you mean the other nations still existed after Harsinai? What does it mean there was destruction to the other nations? Says the Maharal. Umibnei, ki kodem matan Torah, hayu ha'umos ikar ha'metzias ba'olam. Prior to Matan Torah, the Iker existence in the world were the Umas Olam. But you know what happened? That all changed at Maimon Har Sinai. Kasher Hayah Matan Torah, Hayu Charevim Kol HaUmos Shehayu. B'Shas Matan Torah, all the other nations were Charev. They were destroyed. Their Metzias, as being the primary Metzias in the world, ceased to exist. That's why it's called Har Charev. The moment of Har Sinai ushered in a universal shift in the Metzias HaOlam. Until that point, it was a world without Torah, a purely secular world. With Matan Torah came about a complete cessation of the previous secular Metzias, and in its stead came to be a totally new Metzias Ruchnis, a world designed as a Makom Avoda, permeated with Kedusha, crafted by Torah. The facade of the secular world remained, but beneath the external shell of Teva lay a wellspring of Ruchnius. This shift occurred not only on a global level, but within each individual as well. Chazal tell us that when the Nachash was Ba'al Chava, he was Matil Ba'zuhama, spiritual filth, and that Zuhama was transferred to all of Chava's offspring, from generation to generation. However, says the Gemara in Shabbos, Yisrael she'amdu al Har Sinai, pasku zuhamasa. At Har Sinai, the same transformation that the world as a whole underwent was experienced by each individual. Who we were before Matan Torah, bogged down by the filth of the Nachash Zuhama, which represents physicality and Tumah in this world, that existence ceased to exist. And we were recreated with the capacity to live and thrive in the Metzias Ruchness of Torah. This is the Pshat in Parcha Nishmosein B'chol Dibur V'Dibur. Parcha Nishmosein B'chol Dibur V'Dibur was because with the introduction of each new Metzias Ruchness, with each Dibur of the Aseres HaDibros, our previous selves cease to be. As Rav Lobiansky writes so beautifully in the Sefer Timepieces, page 245, at that moment, Maimon Har Sinai, the command of Nasa Adam, let us make man, as the force that animates man, was supplanted by Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. And the Torah became the inner essence of the Jewish soul. I recently became a little Hasidish by affiliation. So if you allow me to say, Alder Hasidus, Parcha Nishmosein, Bechol Dibur V'Dibur, Parcha is Miloshon Perach, to blossom, to flower. Our Neshamos blossomed with each and every Dibur, because each Dibur infused us with more Kedusha and capacity to reach Kirvas Elokim. So now, I think we're prepared to understand why Yisro is the perfect role model for a Hakdama to Kabbalah Satorah. We've seen that at Kabbalah Satorah, a revolutionary spiritual reality was introduced into the world. We also saw that living in that Metzias Ruchness is an all-encompassing endeavor that demands the negation of one's previous existence. So who in all of Torah is the most fitting role model for this process? It's Pasha Yisro. Rashi of Pasuk K of this week's Parsha, first Aliyah, comments on why the Pasuk stresses that Yisro went out to the Midbar. Says Rashi, El v'shivcho shel Yisro dibra kasuv, shehaya yoshev b'chvodo shel olam. Yisro was living it up, b'chvodo shel olam. V'nazvu libo latzeis el midbar makom tohu. And yet he was motivated to go out in this place of complete abyss, lishmoa divrei Torah. He was living so comfortably. He was the Rebbe of the Odei Avodah Zarah. You know, each year I'm sure he had a mehudar, you know, a giant esrog shel asherah. and he always flew first class. He mamash had it all. But he realized that there is an emes in the world called Torah. He heard about the nisim and neflos, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he left his entire life behind, and he went to the Midbar, a place of emptiness, the opposite of how he had lived until now, Lishmo Divri Torah, to envelop himself in this world of Ruchnius. Yisro was the poster child of the transformation necessary to truly be Mekabel Torah. No doubt he would have been the classic keynote speaker on NCSY Shabbatones. You know, he was living it up. He was a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys, and now he's a Hasidic Yid. Therefore, the Torah, as a Hakdama to Kabbalah's Torah, gives us a real-life illustration of what's necessary to truly prepare oneself for Kabbalah's Torah. So our takeaway from this should be twofold. First of all, I think it's clear from that imagery of Kabbalah's Torah that life with Torah, immersed in this world of Ruchnius, is fundamentally distinct from a life devoid of Torah. It's a completely different mitzvah. And I think the second takeaway is that in order to truly experience this reality, we must do our utmost to properly integrate ourselves into this immersive world of Ruchnius. And you know, many people from our background, they were not immediately initiated into this rich, deep, beautiful world that is the Metzias of Ruchnius. We were exposed to the world at large and its ideals and its goals. And either consciously or subconsciously, we incorporated many of those ideals and goals into our own persona. In most cases, there were elements of Yiddishkeit to varying degrees, but it was far from being something we related to as an all-encompassing experience and worldview. But at a certain point in our development, likely in high school or Eretz Yisrael, we experienced the beauty and vastness of this world firsthand. And we were drawn to it. We wanted to experience it more deeply and more potently. We recognized the truth of this world, the depth of this world, the sweetness of connection with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His Torah. And we wanted to dive right in. But we were met with a concrete wall. Our past, our unrefined midos, our guilty pleasures, our laziness, our desire for gashmias, for kavod, all amassed over the course of 18 years living in what was predominantly a mitzias, lacking a kesher with Torah. And I want to qualify, this is not a critique on a particular community, this exists in every single community, from the right to the left. So that's the obstacle we all faced. How do people react to that obstacle? So there are basically three groups. Some people try to demolish that wall of their past immediately. They say, Torah is emes, I want ruchnius, and they proceed to leap to madrigos that are well beyond what they've been accustomed to. They're not realistic with themselves, what they're equipped for, and ultimately, many in this category end up in a very unhealthy place. Others accept the wall's presence as a given, can't be changed. And they just try to integrate bits and pieces of Torah into their existence in a mostly non-Torahic world. But then, there's a third category. There are those who acknowledge the wall. They know that they don't want that wall to be part of their lives. But they recognize that in order to transition from one world to the other in a healthy way, they must remove the bricks in a slow and steady manner. This is the derech that can be matzliach. To have the goal of fully immersing yourself in the spiritual dimension, with the mature recognition that given your past, it's a transition that must, by definition, be incremental. But we must never lose sight of the goal. We must ask ourselves regularly, if we are advancing in our mission of integration into the Olam HaRuchani, or if we're still shackled by the values, the ideals, the temptations of the world that we previously occupied. I want to conclude with one crucial caveat. Until this point, I haven't really addressed what this transition looks like l'maisa. Most of you probably assume that the transition I'm extolling It's for the investment banker to quit his job and learn in Tanamish for the next 60 years. Or for the pre-med student to drop out and go into chinuch. But you're doubly wrong. One's daily occupation has no direct bearing on the world in which he lives. You can have two guys learning next to each other in kolot. And one of them is there because he's completely dabak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His avoda is deepened immensely by learning Torah Lishma. And the other guy, he's there because he doesn't want to work. It could be his father-in-law said he would support him anyways. You know, he gets a lot of kavod from knowing Torah. It's geshmak. He's one of the smarter guys in the Chabura. So that guy is totally steeped in the non-Torah world and being in kol is just feeding his bad midos and his asas. And you could have two executives at a frum company whose offices are right next to each other. And one of them sought a lucrative possession, a lucrative profession, because it will get them prestige. They like European cars. Who doesn't? I'm more of a Japanese car guy. They're insecure about their own self-worth, so they must hide behind their things. And the other guy's there because he wants to be able to support his children's Torah education and to be a builder of his community's Torah institutions. So what we see clearly is that this transition from one world to the other is not one that requires a radical shift in the externals of our life. It's primarily an internal transformation where we ensure that the motivation for whatever we involve ourselves in is Kirvas Elokim. So Lamaisa, what's a Lamaisa? Lamaisa, we should conduct an assessment of the various aspects of our lives. And we should attempt to identify the basis of our actions, our conduct, our decision making. You know, it could be that we speak in a way that was idealized in our old world, but unbecoming of the Ben Torah, we're striving to become in this new world. And the examples are endless. Just to finish, I heard from Lopiansky a few weeks ago on his Friday morning Parsha Shir that there's no better place for one to go undergo the transition from a life where Ruchnius is secondary to one where it's primary and exclusive. There's no better place for that than in yeshiva. A yeshiva is a place which lives and breathes this Metzias Ruchnius. And the longer one spends there, the more they embrace the yeshiva life, the more accustomed they will become to this life of Ruchnius. The Lekach Notzarta the Rabbi Steinmetz spoke about so beautifully last week can only fully be realized after one has molded his worldview to be one of spiritual striving. Only once he sees Ruchnius permeating every fiber of the Yetzirah can he then say about himself, Lekach Notzarta. Be'ezus Hashem, we should be Zocha. Shkoyach, guys. Atzlacha.